This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. It is 6:06 and welcome to Inside Story, where we look at a major headline from multiple perspectives. I'm Lee Tree Lin, with me Sharmila Ganesan. Today, we're discussing the big drop in Malaysia's foreign direct investments, or FDI, over the last year.
So first, we'll speak to Jayant Menon from the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute to understand the significance of our FDI standing.
And then we'll look at what needs to be improved to attract FDI into Malaysia. For this, we'll be joined by P. Gunasegaram of the Vibes and Shaker Institute.
And finally, we'll look farther into the future and talk about areas we can explore to stay competitive. Jason Lowe from Emery Research will be weighing in. This is Inside Story.
It is 6:07 and welcome to Inside Story. So today, as mentioned, we're going to be looking at FDI. And it feels like you could throw a rock and hit a headline in recent days, and it will be about FDI. It will be about a whole host of experts, including former ministers, current ministers, all weighing in and either defending or talking about ways in which we could be improving our FDI. And the reason why that it's caused such a stir is because, according to Reuters, Malaysia's FDI dropped 56% to 3.4 billion in 2020. And if you look at the net foreign investment total, it went from 31.7 billion in 2019 to 13.9 billion in 2020.
So it's a few things, right? The pandemic, of course, is one big reason why this has been impacted. But a lot of experts are also pointing to the fact that because of the emergency declaration, that this has made investors skittish. That that's been one of the points of criticism that's been leveled at the government for declaring it in the first place. But we are talking about a whole year, really. And when we look at our GDP. Our GDP decreased to a total of 5.6% last year, and that's actually the worst performance since the country's 7.4% drop back in 1998, and that was due to the Asian financial crisis. So not really the bar that we want to compare ourselves against. And just looking at our economy over the last year, growth did not look great. So first quarter, we saw a marginal growth of about 0.7%. In the second quarter, this declined by 17.1%. Third quarter, 2.7%, and fourth quarter, 3.4%. So really, compared to 2019, our GDP increased by 4.3%, and then it grew 3.6% in the last quarter. All in all, it's a lot of numbers, but essentially this has been a cause for alarm for a lot of people, especially when we compare ourselves to our neighbours in the region.
Yes, and I think one of the things that we've been hearing from the government, and one reason why in the Prime Minister's recent speech he spoke about the likelihood of there not being MCOs anymore, right? Because the hits to the economy have been too great, and instead it's going to be more localized. That's going to be the approach taken. And I say that to acknowledge, as we've been saying, the impact of COVID-19 in this, and the reason and the impact more specifically of the MCOs. They were necessary as a public health measure, but in terms of looking at lives and livelihoods, I think this is where we're seeing the downside of the measures that we've taken to try and control the spread of COVID-19. And if we look at whether this is cause for concern, the Malaysian Investment Development Authority, or MIDA, has said that the lower net FDI inflows aren't necessarily bad when we look at the global investment landscape and the uncertainties of the year. We also have and I think this is an expected defense, really. Senior Minister and International Trade and Industry Minister Azmin Ali saying that Malaysia isn't losing out. We're just being more selective and choosing to not engage with labor-intensive industries because we don't want to be over-reliant on foreign workers.
There are some things, though, that Bank Negara is doing. They just recently announced the relaxing of the foreign exchange policies. This is, of course, to increase flexibility for businesses and to attract more foreign investments. And they are also investing 15 billion ringgit to developing the 5G network, which has made a lot of headlines recently as well as offering tax incentives. So while it's not a cause for concern. I do feel like it is being taken seriously enough that measures are being put in place. Yeah, so it's one of those things that I don't know if we'll see a huge change happening anytime soon, though.
Well, yes, but I also want to take it back to basics and look at the role that FDI plays in our economy as a whole. Because I think for me personally, with a relatively, I have a general knowledge of FDI, right? But I'm no specialist in this area. And so whenever it is that I hear about FDI and the numbers, well, I understand what it means in terms of jobs, for instance. I understand what it means in terms of influx of money into our country. I am curious about the larger role that it plays in our economy and in our economic stability, because right now we're in that stage where we're talking not just about growth, but about stability and growth. And so I'm curious about what these numbers or how these numbers actually impact Malaysia in that regard.
Yes, and it is something that constantly gets brought up, right? Particularly within a political context. Every time we have instabilities in terms of our politics or people are not happy with the government of the day, the first thing that gets leveled at us is, it's going to scare away foreign investors. Mm. But how much truth does that actually hold? And what does that actually mean in terms of to the man on the ground, what does that mean? And that's something that I think is worth looking at.
So that's what we're going to be starting our show with today. We're going to be looking at the role that FDI plays in economic growth and stability and understanding those numbers in the Malaysian context. Joining us for that will be Jayant Menon, Visiting Senior Fellow at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute. Again, later on, we're going to be looking at what Malaysia could be doing better, how else we could grow. But first up, just understanding FDI. We'd like to know, though, if you have thoughts on Malaysia's performance in this area and if you have any questions that we can help answer. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:15 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. Today, we are taking you inside Malaysia's FDI performance and understanding really where we stand and what else we could do to improve. But first, looking at the role that it plays overall in our economy and trying to understand really what these numbers mean. And we would like to know if you have questions or thoughts on FDI in Malaysia. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. But joining us now in the meantime to weigh in is Jayant Menon, Visiting Senior Fellow at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute. Jayant, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Hi, Lynn. Good to talk to you again.
So let's take it back to basics. Sharmila and I have both been running through the numbers, but I think, we'd like to know what role does FDI play overall in economic growth and stability, and how does that change depending on the status, the economic status of different countries?
I guess a useful starting point is to think of FDI as allowing countries to grow much faster than they could otherwise grow because we now use the savings of foreigners. So FDI basically allows us to use those savings of foreigners to supplement our growth through investments that we can't finance ourselves. And it also allows us to do that without increasing our indebtedness to foreigners. So basically, so this allows us to grow much faster. In the early stages of development, like Malaysia in the 50s and 60s, FDI was targeted at creating employment, basically, trying to absorb more of the labor force into employment. Then over time, of course, it has been driving structural change as well as the economy moved from, agriculture towards manufacturing and services. So it's played multiple roles over time.
So how reliant is the Malaysian economy on FDI?
Malaysia used to be quite heavily reliant on FDI. It was receiving a lot of FDI up to the Asian financial crisis. And that marked a bit of an inflection point. Things changed after the Asian financial crisis of 97, 98, and never really returned, actually. So we never got back to the heydays before that, where large inflows were present. But it's also changed more dramatically since 2005, where Malaysia became a net exporter of capital. So there was more capital leaving than coming in, both FDI and what's called portfolio capital, which is, you know, short-term flows, otherwise termed hot money. But this outflow had partly to do with capital flight and also the GLCs investing abroad, looking for, you know, better returns, I guess. But, you know, they also claimed that they were doing that to limit the crowding out taking place domestically. You know, GLCs are very dominant in the domestic market in many industries. So to reduce the impact on private investment, the claim is that they started looking to invest abroad as well.
Now, what are the pros and cons of relying on FDI to bolster or to grow the economy?
I guess, you know, just like trade, if you rely very heavily on FDI, then it can be a source of instability during, you know, external slowdowns like what we're going through now with COVID and the whole world, you know, having gone through this pandemic. So that's one potential source of instability, I guess, because you can't control how much FDI comes into your country. But, you know, FDI is not just about capital. It's about increasingly about technology and about skills transfer. So you should think of FDI as capital bundled in with a bunch of services that, and this is becoming increasingly more important, the spillovers from technology and the skills transfers in management and how we do different things in manufacturing. That's what matters more over time as economies mature.
So what do foreign investors actually look for when it comes to FDI? And has that changed over time?
You know, if you look at the surveys where they actually ask, you know, the CEOs of multinational corporation what it is that they look for, they almost always say that incentives, which governments are keen on, are not that important. What matters apparently is things like, you know, macro soundness of the economy, political stability, how strong institutions are in the host or potential host country. These sorts of structural factors seem to matter more to the people that make these decisions to invest, not the incentives, which seem to matter mostly to governments more so than the investors, it seems. But over time, I guess, you know, comparative advantage shifts in Malaysia, for instance, you know, wages have been rising over time, real wages. And so, you know, we've lost competitiveness in labor-intensive activities. So now what matters more is the ecosystem overall, the whole, you know, gambit of economic institutions and political and security, right? All of these things matter a lot more now in determining competitiveness for a high middle income country like Malaysia.
And Jen, I'm curious, while we're looking at investors, who are the main players when it comes to the countries that are forming that outflow, right? Has that shifted with new economic superpowers coming into play over the last few decades?
Okay, so the people who invest in Malaysia has changed, and the countries that now we invest in also has changed. The biggest change, I guess, in terms of investment over time, going back to the first inflows, you know, the shift has gone from Japan to Korea, Taiwan, and of course China. Right, China has been the big player. This is, of course, in the more recent past. Before that, even, you know, you had, you know, UK and the US that were dominant. So these things change in line with the industry structure of investments as well. So now, increasingly, investments are in the services area, you know, health, education, those sorts of areas, not, you know, the old-fashioned manufacturing sector, industries in the manufacturing sector, but also in infrastructure. You know, and again, here also not just physical infrastructure, not your roads and rail and ports, but increasingly in digital infrastructure, in sort of improving digital connectivity. And this is an area where technological change is very rapid. So, yeah, so both the country composition is changing in line with the industry composition of investment.
Now, you've mentioned COVID-19 several times already. I was wondering how COVID-19 affected FDI around the world and in Malaysia in particular.
Right. Okay. So COVID-19 has obviously put the brakes on global flows of FDI. The UN Conference on Trade and Development, UNCTAD, that does a lot of measurements on this, is predicting up to 40% decline of outflows from developed to developing countries. There's also retrenchment. The IMF thinks more than 80 billion of retrenchment of investments from developing countries are taking place. So clearly there's been a global squeeze on FDI flows. You know, we don't know how long this will last. It all depends on how quickly we recover. But apart from that, in this region and Malaysia, there's been sort of offsetting factors. You know, the U.S.-China trade war has moved some investments in supply chains in China towards this region and towards Vietnam mainly, but Malaysia has also received some of that. And that has been a bit of you know, a counter to the overall slowdown globally.
In conclusion, how would you say Malaysia is doing on the FDI front, and how does it compare to our neighbours? That seems to be the crucial comparison.
Right. So our neighbours are becoming more competitive, and the number of countries we compete with is also increasing as new players come in. You know, Vietnam wasn't a player that we competed with, you know, a decade ago. Neither was Cambodia or Laos. And even, you know, Philippines and Indonesia that weren't big recipients of the supply chain investments are now trying very hard to get some of that, get their share. So competition is rising. Malaysia is looking to increase investments at a higher end of that supply chain, but it's been struggling. You know, there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, we don't have time to go into all of them, but I think certainly the political uncertainty hasn't helped in Malaysia. That is a factor that clearly, you know, Malaysia has had as a strength for a long time. You know, macro stability and political uncertainty, that has been a negative of late. So hopefully that can be resolved. And also a lot of skills mismatches in improving our training and TVET sectors will have to play a role as well if we are to remain competitive with the rising level of competition in the region.
Jen, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you also. Have a good evening.
You too. That was Jayant Menon, Visiting Senior Fellow at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute, giving us a primer of sorts on FDI and the role that it plays in the Malaysian economy. And I think, you know, Jayant's final point sets us up perfectly for the rest of the show, in which we're going to be exploring the ways in which Malaysia perhaps could improve, you know, areas that we've been found lacking and areas that we can try to future-proof. That's going to be the last segment. We'd like to know, though, what do you think about, what do you make of the decrease in FDI into our country? What are your thoughts? What are your questions? Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bring forth Moolah, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:36 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We are looking today at FDI and specifically how Malaysia is doing in this regional race that we're having when it comes to foreign direct investment. And we heard earlier on from Jayant Menon, visiting senior fellow at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute, who painted a picture really about where it stands in our economy at large and in the economy of developing nations as a whole, because I think that's really the question, particularly in the context of ASEAN.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is, of course, that the changing idea of what the importance of something like the FDI, right? And the fact that I found it pretty interesting to hear about how the Asian financial crisis might have in some ways prepared us to lower our reliance on that FDI and turn to other means in which to keep our economy running, which, I don't know, perhaps there's some merit to the fact that so many of our leaders are saying this isn't as huge a cause for concern as it might seem at first glance.
Yes, leaders is right. Mm-hmm. However, leaders in the opposition have been saying almost entirely the opposite, yeah. Right? Pointing out, I think, some of the ways in which the key things that have emerged have been, for example, coordination and a lack thereof. Mm. So not just political stability, which is something that we've talked about plenty of times, but I think if we look even at the mechanism itself, there's an issue to do with coordinating agencies, whether there are too many of them, for instance. Are there clear guidelines when it comes to foreign investment? Do we have a clear long-term direction? I think so. Even if we strip away the politics of it all, there are specific things on mechanism and I think the nuts and bolts of it that we do need to talk about.
Yeah, and I think that that's a criticism that on a larger level has been something the government has been struggling with, right? Post Lanka Sheraton, just functioning as an engine that puts these various parts together.
So we want to talk about Malaysia and, you know, the ways in which we have perhaps been found lacking when it comes to foreign direct investment. We want to know what your thoughts are. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We are now crossing over to P. Gunasegaram, editorial consultant at The Vibes and executive director of advocacy organization Shaker Institute. Guna, thank you so much for speaking.
Welcome.
So let's talk about this. When it comes to policy, what have we put in place recently to attract FDI into the country?
I can't see anything which has been done, actually, although I think there were reports today that the Trade and Industry Minister has got a plan. So far, nothing really has been done. But overall, apart from the political uncertainty, which I think is causing all of us, all of the problems over investment, It is still a reasonably attractive place for investment in terms of infrastructure, trained workforce, incentives and ease of operations. So in the ASEAN region, Malaysia will still be the second most attractive place to invest in after Singapore. So the main problem is still the political uncertainty and the impact of the emergency which is currently in force.
So to look more closely at some of the criticisms, leveled at this, the transparency is the fact that's often been cited for as a reason why our FDI numbers have dropped. Could you explain this particular aspect?
I think it may not be when you say transparency, what exactly is transparency of what are they talking about? I would think it is more like uncertainty. You do not know what this government might do in future and things like that. And transparency is not really a major factor as such, except that the government should perhaps disclose as much information, more information about things as possible.
So former MITI Minister Ong Kian Ming recently wrote an article outlining some recommendations for the government. And I want to pick up on two elements specifically, consolidating coordinating agencies and clearer guidelines for foreign investment. He in fact acknowledged that Pakatan Harapan lacked political will in their term to deal with the first element. I was curious what your thoughts are on these points.
All right. I think in terms, we've had a long history of foreign direct investments. So the guidelines are in place for this. And so I think investors may want more, say, perhaps tax concessions and subsidies and things like that. But some like investors from the U.S. cannot participate in this kind of incentives therefore because they are taxed for it in their home country anyway. So that that doesn't help. But other things like greater tax incentives, maybe giving land at lower cost and things like that. But I think the main thing that they look for is actually good infrastructure, lack of streamlined bureaucracy, which they have to some extent. They have done this over the years. They have made conditions for foreign investments very easy, so much so that domestic investors complain that they don't have the same advantages that foreign investors have. So the clearer guidelines for foreign investment, I think the even now probably if you're manufacturing for the export sector, if most of your goods are exported, you can own 100% of your operations. Yeah? So long as you are exporting most of it, so I think the clearer sort of like guidelines, maybe like operating guidelines, things on the ground and so on, to make it easier for them.
So let's talk about direction, right? Because Dato' Sri Johari Abdul Ghani, he suggested that one of the issues here is a lack of a clear long-term direction, particularly in reference to the 12th Malaysia Plan. Do you think that there has been sufficient direction overall for our economy?
I think the in terms of the longer-term directions, that still has not. And then Dato' Johari Ghani has said, the 12th Malaysia Plan will help to flesh it out. But I think the investors are more concerned about the near-term impacts on the economy itself. Is this government good for the economy? What is it going to do in future? What kind of policies is it going to come up with? And is there actually sufficient check and balance and things like that? When you have uncertainty in investors don't like it, especially as to how much government policy will change. I really don't think we will change much in terms of foreign investment policy. We have always had a very open stance towards foreign direct investments into the country. But when the situation is so uncertain, it is something that foreign investors are bound to be concerned about, and they would prefer to perhaps take a wait and see attitude before they put more money in. So the other thing is, we are not such a large market within ASEAN, because some of the markets are very much larger. So Indonesia, perhaps close to 250 million people. Vietnam, 85 million, going on 100 million, I think. It's about that kind of population range. And they are looking at this as more rapid growing economies, which will give them opportunities. And the labor costs there tend to be very low as well. So we need to upskill in terms of our workforce capabilities to make sure that our workers can do things which are more productive. And that takes education to do so. And we have actually lagged behind very much over the years in terms of training and education, so much so that we are very, very far away from Singapore, which is considered to be a high-end manufacturing hub. So the other thing is perhaps we should look into the realm of services, tech industries, software, and those kind of things. Although we have set up the multimedia super corridor, it has not turned out to be as good as what it was anticipated to be, largely, I think, because of the lack of trained manpower in these areas.
Bank Negara Malaysia has announced measures to liberalise its foreign exchange policy to attract FDI. What are your thoughts on this move?
I think the foreign exchange policy was still pretty okay before. I mean, Bank Negara does not restrict the inflow or outflow of foreign currency. So you basically need to report the transactions to Bank Negara. And I'm not aware that they have actually, say, stopped the repatriation of dividends before and so on. But I think sometimes in the approval process, they may take into account to see whether there is a net inflow of money as a result of the investment. I mean, let me give you an example. If it's a totally export-oriented industry, then all of the production goes for exports, which contributes to the rise in exports, you know, in terms of the value added. So even if the foreign manufacturers or service providers repatriate this money overseas, there is a net inflow because the revenue will be always more than the dividends. Whereas if you are manufacturing, say, for the local sector and say 80% of the foreign investors' market is local, then what happens is you are making money from Malaysia, but when you take out your dividends, in terms of dividends, if you take it out of the country, then there is a net outflow for the country. So there may be some discouragement of those kind of investments. So in that case, I think the country can actually incentivize accordingly, the companies accordingly. So you give more incentives the more that you export. So,
Guna, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Welcome.
That was P. Gunasegaram, editorial consultant at The Vibes and executive director of advocacy organization Shaker Institute. After this, we will be hearing about ways in which we can try to future-proof or look towards the future when it comes to FDI in our country. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:49 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We've been talking about FDI and Malaysia throughout this hour. Now we want to look at ways in which we can grow into the future, avenues to explore. Joining us for that, Jason Low, Head of Social Law and Human Rights at Eben Research. Jason, thanks for speaking with us. So reports show, and our guests have also said, you know, we are losing out on FDI to our regional neighbours. Could you talk to us about the ways in which other countries might be moving up the value chain and how we could emulate that?
If you're looking at, for example, Vietnam has been really surging in terms of their manufacturing industry, especially their automotive industry, and they're getting very strong. For example, with VinFast, which is a Vietnamese government-linked company that specializes in the production of electric vehicles. So I think, like in our case, like Proton, for example, I think Proton should also, now that it's under the ownership of Geely, look into the manufacturing of electric vehicles as well. And so perhaps we could also enjoy some form of technology transfer from China to Malaysia in terms of electric vehicles. And other countries like Singapore, if you're talking about moving up the value chain, then of course we are talking in terms of the life sciences, engineering, nanotechnology, and so on and so forth. So I think we can emulate Singapore in the form of Iskandar Malaysia, where we can have a sort of clustering of academia, training and industry that could leverage on our proximity with Singapore. We can provide the space, we can provide the manpower and even the talent pool, and on the part of Singapore, which draws in foreign expertise, we can then pull in the skills and the investments.
So taking a step back, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad has suggested that Malaysia needs to be less reliant on FDI. Would you agree?
I would say it actually depends, because FDI has been an important mainstay of Malaysia ever since independence, although it was in a crude sense of FDI in our primary industry, especially of rubber and later on oil palm. But since the 1970s, we have been doing so well in attracting FDI, especially multinational companies, to come to places like Penang. And I think FDI has been an important employment provider for Malaysia, because manufacturing, which is so dependent on FDI, is one of the top three revenue earners for Malaysia, in addition to commodities and tourism. But that said, due to supply chain reconfiguration, reshoring of MNCs, you know, precipitated by, for example, the tit-for-tat Sino-US trade dispute. So, of course, it raises the costs for the MNCs operating in China. So they have done their calculation, whether is it more expensive to relocate or to remain in China, because if you have, let's say, a jacket that is imposed with 25% tariffs, it not only adds nominal cost, but the fact is that there are different layers in the production processes. So the jacket may be made in China, but along the way, the materials that is imported by the Chinese manufacturer may be from a different country, or that certain part of the production process may be made in Bangladesh, and so on and so forth. So whilst we cannot avoid depending on FDI, we have to make sure that we are ready to pull in the FDI that are coming out of China or even Japan, because Japan too has been affected, especially in terms of the electrical and electronics sector, because technology is also a very sensitive sector, because it has spilled over into the military industry. And so we need to be alert to any possible opportunities that may come our way. But at the same time also, we cannot be over-reliant on one country, like for example, China, because that would weaken our bargaining power and so on and so forth. So I think the way forward is to intensify our diversification of FDI, looking to new markets, looking to more countries for FDI opportunities.
Now, given the bleak reports around FDI at the moment, do you foresee things turning around once we do emerge from the pandemic?
Yes, I would say that things can still turn around because, for example, the fact that Amazon wants to build data centers in Indonesia, bypassing Malaysia, even Singapore, does not mean that that is a sign that it is the end of Malaysia, that Malaysia is now automatically the sick man of Southeast Asia. I would say that there needs to be greater coordination between the federal and the state governments. That is very important. So a good example is Selangor. Selangor is the country's leading and one of the region's leading aerospace hub. We have done so well in this respect. And so there needs to be greater coordination between the aerospace agency of the federal government and the aerospace agency of the state government, so that both can work together to attract, to continue to attract the investments in this area. And moving on, of course, the life sciences is also a good sector that Malaysia can be well poised to attract. So in terms of vaccine, we should move beyond, you know, bottling to producing our own vaccine, which I think is possible given the fact that countries like Russia and China are willing to share their knowledge. And it is also important that Malaysia and the rest of the region, in other words, ASEAN, really leverage on their common regional framework, that they should come up with a single ASEAN industrial master plan, which currently is not in place, is lacking. They should build upon the pre-existing framework that has been focused on combating post-COVID-19 and how to exit COVID-19 together as a region. So we can start off by building on the framework in terms of ensuring that vital supplies continue to move in and out of the region. So from there, we can talk about enhancing the cooperation in terms of production network, how factories and manufacturing plants in Malaysia can collaborate with factories and manufacturing plants in the rest of the region on a strategic and systematic manner. And how can Malaysia be part of the entire supply chain and entire manufacturing process, even where we have lost out to foreign direct investment to the country concerned, you know? So I think that the opportunity is there, but that requires proactive measures on our part.
Jason, thank you so much for speaking with us. That was Jason Low, Head of Social Law and Human Rights at MA Research, speaking about the potential future of FDI for the country. If you missed it earlier on, we heard from P. Gunasegaram on some of the areas in which Malaysia has been found lacking when it comes to FDIs. And right at the start, if you are wondering about all these numbers that have been hitting the headlines, populating the articles, and trying to make sense of it, we heard from Jayant Menon, visiting senior fellow at the ICC Yusof Ishak Institute about the context of those numbers, really, and what FDI means for the Malaysian economy. So if you missed those conversations, you can find them when we podcast the show, which will be available on Inside Story on our website, bfm.my, or our app. If you have thoughts you'd like to share, send them our way. In the meantime, we are headed to the 7 o'clock news. This is Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.